Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 127 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to recap a little bit of nerd news. We're going to begin with a little bit of entertainment, talk about our thoughts on WandaVision, the Godzilla vs. Kong release gets moved up, and then we'll jump into some tech with giving some highlights out of the CES 2021 virtual show, flying cars, a quick update on the tech battle over Parler, some Starlink news, and then UFOs and space news. A lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, and here we are at episode 127. And not much in the world of entertainment to open up the show, but at least we finally get into 2021 and we get the first Marvel show of Disney Plus nonsense that we were supposed to get a long time ago.
Yeah, it finally released this last Friday, and you know, with the promotion campaign they gave, everybody's kind of wondering what this show was going to be and how it was going to play out and how it was going to tie into the MCU. And after two episodes, you were no further to those answers than when you started. It was entertaining, but interesting, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, you know, I read your review over at the Nerd Cantina. The link's in the show notes here. I felt your review was a little harsh on it in the sense that, where you kind of criticized the show as really being this slow build, that maybe it's not good for new audiences, or the thought that Marvel doesn't have to give a shit about new audience members. Like, they don't have to worry about somebody joining WandaVision. Like, if for whatever reason, you know, you have your Disney Plus subscription because you just love Lady and the Tramp and all the other old Disney movies, and you saw this pop up and you thought, oh, this is where I'm going to start my Marvel journey. Well, fuck you. Like, you don't, this isn't for you.
So that's how I kind of wanted to write the review, is from a meshed kind of aspect of that viewer plus viewers like us, you know, because that's basically the two viewers are going to watch this show. Somebody that got it because they just want everything on Disney Plus for their kids. And because of COVID, we've streamed the shit out of everything on the goddamn planet. And now you're looking for a new show. And of course, it's on the banner. Everybody's talking about it. Eh, fuck it. I'll try out this WandaVision. If that's you, fuck, man, your head hurts still.
Yeah, like, I mean, but I don't think, I'm glad that it's apparent that Marvel didn't care about that person, right? Like, I find the show actually incredibly entertaining. I guess I am old enough, right? Like, I grew up in the Nick at Night era.
Exactly. And that's another point I made. In the review.
I could see somebody, you know, generationally younger than us, who's looking at it and be like, why is this black and white? Why are there two beds in the bedroom? Why are, like, not understanding the Dick Van Dyke references and the Bewitched references and all of the throwback of, you know, 50s TV and stuff like that? Like,
you got to do 10 hours of Nick at Night research just to get a lot of why the show was good. If you're a millennial or younger, you know, like that was a point I made. But also, as a Marvel enthusiast who's seen all the movies multiple times, it didn't wet my beak enough in the overall plot to get me really excited about the show either. You know, I was entertained. I did enjoy it. But at the same time, I was just going, where's the fucking meat? Like, you gave me all the side dishes. Where's the fucking beef?
Like, I don't know. I guess this is where I was hoping that in Disney Plus, if you're going to do 8-9 episode seasons and stuff like that, that you're not filling every single episode with this gigantic, you know, MCU tie-in and everything else. Just tell a story.
Well, that's what I thought. I was like, because they released two episodes in the first, and I was like, all right, one episode to just lay the foundation of this nostalgia. I thought for sure the second episode was going to crack open the door a little wider on the big overall scheme, and then leave you with 3-9 on a weekly release. But no, after episode 1 and 2, you're really minimally anywhere. There's a bunch of Easter eggs, you know, some references, Baron von Strucker, a couple Hydra symbols in there. You know, some shit's going down. If you've watched 20 other fucking movies before this show, you know? So like I said, I gave it 3 stars on the rating. I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was great. I was entertained, but I just, after watching both episodes, I was kind of like, 3, 4, and 5 are really going to make or break this show. If they keep going along the same kind of pace in episodes 3, 4, and 5, you're going to lose a lot of viewership. There's going to be a lot of people like, I don't give a shit. Yeah, cool. You made a WandaVision Brady Bunch episode. Big fucking deal. Like, when does this even take place? Like, I don't even know in the timeline of when, like, what year are we? Like, are we post-snap, pre-snap? Are we post? Yeah. Like, we don't know any of this shit. So, yeah, like, I'm not going to wait forever for those answers, you know, like.
As long as the individual episodes are entertaining to me, I'll just keep watching it, and I'll trust that the tie-in's going to come somewhere. Eventually, they're going to break this weird reality that Wanda's living in, and from there, then we'll
yeah.
We'll
if I wasn't trying more. To but be okay a critic, if I wasn't trying to be a critic, I'd just keep letting it slide. But it's part of my job here to analyze and criticize, and those were my criticisms.
Well, I'll just say that, you know, Marvel has built this thing out as Marvel's first sitcom, and everybody just expected that to just be like, okay, that's just a promotional thing. Like, you're not actually going to try to be like a sitcom and funny about this. They went balls deep in film.
Yeah, film before a live studio audience.
Yeah, they went full sitcom. I don't know why I enjoy it so much, but I'm okay. I'll wait till the finale for the full, like,
it was just so, it was just like,
tie-in. I don't care.
There was the few scenes in the 2 episodes where it got really kind of creepy and like, and you felt like, oh shit, here we go. Give it to me. And then it was like, womp. Like, and it was just such a fucking tease of like, you know, we haven't had anything going on in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in a long time. This is the first thing that we got.
Yeah. And we still don't even have like a release date for Black Widow yet. Yeah,
exactly. You know what I'm saying? So to finally get your hands on some new shit and you know, like, to me, it's like waiting for your favorite, you know, rapper to drop a new album. The first 6 tracks are intros and skits. And you're just like, where the fuck's the first song? Little Uzi Pump. Guy, like, where's the fucking song?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, like I said, I find it entertaining enough. It's nostalgic enough. It's also original enough in the, you know, in the jokes that they're telling and the weird interactions they're having. I'm good with it. But yeah, I could see the criticism, especially if all you want is your Marvel to be just action packed and everything else, but and all like tightly tied in together. And I just don't care, especially if you're going to do these TV shows. I actually like that this is the standard they're setting for the TV shows, is that they don't have to all be just a direct movie tie-in. They don't all have to progress a storyline. They could be their own little side things and whatever.
I totally get that. And, you know, I don't want to be overcritical, but at the same time, like, Mandalorian didn't drop Baby Yoda on the last episode, okay? You got it. End of first episode. Here comes episode 2. Let's ride out with some good shit. You know, like, I was down with a one-off one episode. By episode 2, I wanted some more depth in my plot. Hey. I wanted character development, yeah. You know, and, you know, I didn't realize all it took was a stick of gum to really fuck Vision up that bad. I really didn't see that coming. But whatever, yeah. Here we are.
I still find that hilarious. So,
dude just goes on a fucking, you know, a juicy fruit bender, and oh god! All right, let's get out of here.
Yeah, I don't know why we talk so much about that. all right, and then I guess the only other real thing in entertainment is, you know, we get the trailer and the Godzilla vs. Kong release date gets moved up to March 2021, which means that obviously they settled with the studio there, because, you know, that was one of the most contested production companies coming out of this HBO Max decision. The Godzilla vs. Kong team was pissed about that decision, and they were threatening, they were trying to find some way to litigate it out. And apparently HBO Max, Warner Media has paid them enough money to just shut up and release early.
Yeah, I'm hoping this starts a trend. I mean, these movies were supposed to come out last year. There's no reason why we need to be pushing these things off till mid or end 2021, especially if you're just going to release them on fucking HBO Max the same day as theaters. Like, what the fuck are we holding Dune till the end of 2021 for? What the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, why is Bond scheduled for the end of the summer? Like, these are things that, like, no. Let's get theaters open. Let's get a nice, good release at once every month. Put the bomb shit up that people have been waiting for up at the front of the gate. Like, I give a fuck if you want to release Tom and Jerry anytime soon, but there's a handful of fucking movies up there that, like, were supposed to be big releases last year, and they're just like, yeah, no, we're going to push it back a year. It's like, a year. But we were hoping that they pushed it that far back as just a let's see where this virus goes. And now that vaccinations are rolling out and things like that, they can say, all right, no, fuck that. We'll release this one in March. We'll release this one in April. Like, I'm hoping this starts a trend.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it starts a trend. I think it really just comes down to, it depends on the studios, depends on how much money they're sitting on these movies. Like, we knew the Godzilla vs. Kong people, they tried to sell it out to Netflix last year when it looked like the theaters would be closed, and Warner Media said, nope, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to sell the rights to this. So this is a team that has been wanting to get their movie out there and wanting to get paid sooner than later. So, you know, maybe this is a one-off just based off of that, but because I still don't see them moving up like Dune and stuff like that. They're still going to wait until an optimal theatrical viewing, even if it's going to go on HBO Max.
Theaters at my house still ain't even open yet. And I'm telling you right now, if I have to write a review for Godzilla versus Kong from my TV, and again, I don't have a cheap TV. I have a nice, like, little viewing station. I'm still pissed. I'm fucking pissed. If I can't go see Godzilla versus Kong in a goddamn Dolby theater, I am going to throw a fucking shit fit. Stay tuned for episode 140 or whatever the fuck that'll be, because I'm going to be mad than a motherfucker.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's going to be the case. So, I don't know. In the end, let's see if HBO Max starts rolling out other release dates earlier, but there's no indication yet that they're going to do so. I'm just still, we're still just waiting for everybody else. Like, at least Warner made a plan, and it pissed off the theater owners and stuff like that, but they articulated a plan. Yeah. Where's Sony's plan? Where's Disney and Marvel's plan? We don't know right now. We do not know. 3 weeks into 2021 now, when any of these movies that are finished are coming out.
Yeah, like I said, theaters are still shut down. There's really no place to go watch these movies other than streaming services. So we got to figure it out. I've still got my fingers crossed for this year. I'm still holding my breath.
All right, and then I guess we can just jump into tech, and the big thing in tech we'll lead with, and that was the Consumer Electronics Show, CES 2021, fully virtual show, and it doesn't have the same.
Don't feel right, man.
It does. Yeah, it just doesn't have the same interest. Now it still actually had a really strong showing. I think there were still over like 1,900 brands that submitted and did something along the virtual convention, as far as, highlighting new tech, trying to get some hype around their products, stuff like that. So it still had a very strong convention type numbers of showing. It just, I don't know. Like, it's not like I even go to the convention, but it's just easier to watch the YouTube videos of somebody out on the floor walking from booth to booth showing these interesting things. It's like, I just don't have the time to watch everybody's 30-minute hype video that they produced and everything else. It just, to me, I couldn't get into
the crowd reaction and the fan interaction is a big part of what makes a lot of these products go viral, and what you see is like, oh, this is going to be really good for the market. This is, based on audience reaction, you could see what is going to be really popular in coming months, or just give you that, like, why do you even make this kind of, like, why did you think the world needed this product? without that, it's just a long couple days of of demo videos, and we all know that no company is going to put out a video that makes their product look bad, so you don't get any convention fails. You know what I mean? And you don't really know if these products are going to work the way that they say they're going to work, because again, no one's going to put out a demo video that shows their shit, you know, bugging out or anything like that. When they have to put it on the show floor and do demos and stuff like that, you really get to see the whole product and if it functions right.
Yeah. Now there are some cool things that I've seen in like in various recap videos and articles that have come out, that I find personally like interesting as far as the tech and the future potential for like the tech. One of them being like this Mudra band. It's pretty cool. It's like it's a iPhone band that it costs a couple hundred dollars. I think it was like $180 or something like that. Almost $200, but it's just a watch band, but it does neural mapping of your wrist. So that way you can control your Apple Watch or whatever it's called with just finger gestures, not touching the screen. So it can map, like you train it, it does neural mapping, and then you can train it to where it understands like, hey, this is what I mean for swiping the screen, this is what I mean for pressing the screen, and you can do things with just your fingers, as gestures, no actual physical contact. I mean, I don't have an Apple Watch. This means nothing to me. But would I actually want that band to be Bluetooth connected to my phone, to where I could just swipe through articles or whatever else and not actually have to have my phone even in my hand or whatever else? Like this concept of neural mapping to actually create that be inputs into an electronic device is incredibly cool, to where it's non-invasive, just a watch band that I'm probably already wearing anyway. I think that's actually really cool technology that they only have planned for the Apple Watch right now.
That's some of the best things about the CES, is like seeing a product that you didn't even know you needed until you saw it. You know, like you just walk, a lot of people walk up and down those aisles and they bump into something and it just changes the whole way you look at your day or your life, because like, oh my God, I didn't know I even needed that. But now that I know it exists, I need that in my life. Like that is one of the funnest things about these conventions, and a lot of that gets lost. It's sad.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's obviously always good robots coming out of CES. That's one of the more interesting things for us. They have a couple different robots. One is like this weird like personal assistant robot that just has a screen that just kind of follows you around, and it's like a walking, you know, Amazon Echo device or whatever else. But the cooler one is this Samsung Handy Bot, and like it shows this thing actually using its camera to analyze dishes in the sink, and then it's loading the dishwasher for you. It's pouring drinks for you on the counter. It has a single movable arm, and it is demonstrated doing all kinds of things that I don't want to do in my own damn house.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time since the Roomba came out. We
gotta get Jetsons level soon. Like, I'm done with this household chores shit.
How are there not floating drones that just stay within like a foot of a dog's ass and pick up dog poop for you yet? Like, how is that?
Oh man, how are we not taking that to CES next year? If there's not a MIT team right now working on just a tiny little fucking RC car drone that just follows your dog when you're on walks.
You just put like this little band around your dog's tail. It just hovers there. Like, it's got the neural mapping for when it squats. And, you know, odor sensing for location. Yeah. Like, I got it all planned out in my head. Yeah, I came up within 3 minutes. How is this not a thing? How is this not a thing?
You better go file a patent before Wednesday comes.
It's documented on the show, time stamped. I got it. TM.
And then, you know, some other things. There's some wearable technology, some cool earbuds, and you know, different glasses, like augmented reality glasses. There's one like computer productivity glasses that you could wear that when you were wearing it, it made it to where you had like the equivalent of like six 18-inch monitors to, you know, puts like dual monitor productivity at like a new level that you're just looking at in this like fish eye eyeglasses that you can connect to your computer as like a super monitor. I don't know who the hell's ever wearing that, but all right, I guess go for it.
You know, we got the links to all these products in our show notes. There's just too much at these conventions that you can even cover. And we ain't got time to do a whole CES show. So
there's a lot in there's some interesting stuff in gaming, especially for like the PC gamers, as far as NVIDIA releasing more information on new graphics cards and everything else. There was also this this like flexible laptop that's kind of like a smaller foldable laptop, but it's a gaming computer because it has its own standalone separate plug-in GPU. So like it's a lightweight, extremely lightweight kind of computer just to be mobile, but then almost kind of like it looks like a standalone like CD drive that you plug into it, and then it gives it like super gaming computer GPU capability on what is like a 17-inch smaller laptop. So I guess if you're just that person who wants a small computer to go around and work with, but also gaming capability, that's not a bad idea.
Rather than figuring out how to fit all the guts into this thin, flat surface, just give me like a box to carry on the side, and like I'll assemble my screen, you know, like some nerdy sniper that just you know, sets up at a Starbucks, unfolds his bag, screws in a bunch of doodads, and then just game the shit out of everything. Like, I'm down with that.
I thought that was actually really cool. I thought that was a really interesting approach towards a very high-end but very portable gaming machine. So, all right. I guess that's it for nerding out on CES. Like I said, there's a ton to go through. Those are what we found most interesting.
Yeah. Watch some kids' YouTube video. Read the show notes. Drop a line in the Cantina Facebook group and let us know what your favorite product is, and we'll either agree or shit on it.
Although it's something that we've talked about regularly, so we'll do this as a separate thing. But at CES 2021, Cadillac demonstrated the EVTOL. I don't know if you say it like EVTOL or whatever, but it's a vertical takeoff and landing vehicle. It's a single passenger, and it's like it looks super Cadillac, right? Like it looks super luxurious.
The thing looked gangster. I'm not gonna lie.
It's essentially like a quadcopter enclosed single passenger vertical takeoff air taxi is what they're calling it. I mean, it looks cool as a concept. I don't know. It doesn't say in any way if there's ever, like, even there's prototypes made or whatever else. Like, who knows if this is ever going to be a thing. But this is what Cadillac envisions of a air taxi or flying car type thing.
Yeah, so we got Cadillac coming out with that at CES. We also got Chrysler and Fiat announcing plans to mass produce flying cars. So like, we're not talking about like one prototype. They're like, no, we're gonna have an assembly line of these bitches by 2023. We're talking, you know, even if it's the end of 2023, we're talking 3 years. Like, I'm all about autonomous driving. I'm all about like where cars are headed. I'm not too sure about this flying shit though, man. Like, I am really not too sure. Some car flies through my roof one day, I'm salty as shit. Like, I see what people do in regular automobiles. Like, I don't know if as a species we are prepared to just be letting random people fly through the air.
Yeah, and this is something that I'm not fully kind of paying attention to.
Yeah, I know. Like, what's the plan here, guys?
Is electric air travel, right? And the press release coming out of Chrysler is they talked about in 2021, we will see the production and we will see the flight of hybrid aircraft, which are, you know, traditional fuel and electric. And they said by 2022, 2023, the first, like, all electric aircraft will be coming out. There will be a new class of aircraft by 2023, and they intend on being in the mass production of those in 2023 with, like, thousands of them in the sky in 2024. A full electric small passenger aircraft that will serve as flying cars. And I mean, if we could do it, great. I'll get in one in about 2026. let's get 3 years of other people driving these things and flying these things before I bother ever being willing to get in one. But if you can, you know, it, these they're saying that they can design this based off of like current battery technology and electric technology. They can design this to fly 60 miles at 150 miles per hour on a single charge is what they expect.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, all right, let's do it.
I just know, man, there's a handful of people in real life that I don't even really want to get in a car with. this is like, God forbid one of these nameless people, and you probably know who I'm talking about if you're listening to the show, there's no goddamn way the dude's like, yeah, I got my flying car, let's go in, let's get in for a ride. No. What do you mean no? You don't want to get in? Let's fly. No, bro. I see what the front fender of your car looks like. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I'm really curious, like, even if we can get to a point that we're manufacturing this, let's see how the FAA handles this. Let's see how the hell the government steps in.
There's not enough air traffic controllers killing themselves every goddamn day.
That's what I would really be curious.
Their job is still on the highest.
What is the licensing requirements? What's the regulation requirements? Like, are you going to let people fly this over people's houses, or are they going to have to follow certain, you know, very specific roads? They don't fly over.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, I don't know.
People are ignorant as fuck. The day like a McDonald's Sprite lands on my roof. the amount of sky litter that'll be dropping in people's goddamn houses. Like, humans are shitty savages, I'm telling you. Like, we laugh about it now, but you laugh because we know this is a real problem. Some fucking ignorant ass piece of trash is gonna drop a used Happy Meal in my fucking backyard.
So let's see. Hopefully it happens by 2023 though. No matter what, I want to see it happen. I want to have these conversations. So, all right. So that's it for new innovative tech. Let's do a quick update on Parler. We talked about it last week to some great extent. If you didn't listen last week and you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, I'll give you a quick rundown. Parler, right-wing social media following the capital tax, gets crushed by all big tech, left-leaning big tech, which is pretty much all of the big ones. So Parler gets completely crushed. Apple App Store shuts them down. Google Play doesn't allow their app to be distributed through Google. And then Amazon web hosting through Amazon Web Services just kills their contract. And then they die within 24 hours. They're gone. So since then, Parler was able to find a web host. It's a web host that other kind of right-wing companies and stuff have turned to in the past. They were working on an arrangement there. Parler CEO was saying that, hey, we may never come back. Like, this is probably our death. The CEO was taking some pretty big hits. But actually, as of today, the Parler website is back and available. Again, I'm not a Parler user. I don't plan on being a part of that service, but we were last week quite offended by just the fact that how much consolidated power exists in just a handful of companies, a handful of people really ran by their personal ideology. And we just didn't like the taste of that. So it's good to see them come back to life to some degree, that it wasn't a complete death blow, although they still might not survive this. Like, they still might disappear.
Well, I mean, not to mention that I also find it, you know, off-putting that, you know, I have conservative friends. They're not crazy people. They're not bad people.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of shitty that, you know, anytime they express some views, they get pigeonholed into being a racist or white supremacist or just whatever hate term you want to label on them just because they have a conservative viewpoint of the world. And then they find a place where they can express their ideas and be around some crazies, but just probably majority of other like-minded people. And it just gets shut down. This is not how you handle social discourse. This is not how an intelligent, civilized society handles things. So it had multiple ramifications and downsides. I'm glad they found some place to host it. But at the same time, it is just only more pigeonholing them into being this, like, you know, like the skinhead bar in the neighborhood. Like, it's and that's, I don't think is its intention. I don't think that's overall what it is. Yes, you'll be able to find some crazies on there, but at the same time, I joined Parler because I want to know what that crowd is saying. Like, I don't want to fight, I don't want to have a discussion with somebody that has opposite views and be totally blindsided by what their opinion or how they see the world is. I want to know these things. It was good for me to go on there and follow a few conservative people that I have a little bit of respect for and see, okay, well, what's your opinion? Without millions of comments on their shit, just calling them a horrible, deplorable person.
Yeah. I think there's definitely a place for some kind of balanced media, and I don't know if we're getting it, but we'll see if Parler survives. Like I said, it's this, when I said Parler's website is back, it means that, like, they're actually just hosted and you can go to parler.com, but the service is still down. Like, the social media aspect of it, being able to log into your account and being able to I don't know what they call it, the version of a tweet that Parler does, that is still down. Like, they still don't have functionality to their website, but at least you can go to parler.com and it doesn't give you an error code, a 404 error
website
page
not available.
You can go to it's just a message from the CEO saying that, like, hey, this is why they exist, because privacy is important to free speech and essential, and that they're here fighting to hopefully come back. Like, I get it, but like I said, this still may be the death blow that they got, but maybe a little more life today than last week when we talked about it. All right, and then let's do another quick follow-up. Last week, we talked about Elon being the richest man in the world, and we said probably by the time that our episode released, that might not be the case.
I think by the time you got finished with that sentence while we were recording, he wasn't the richest anymore.
So yeah, he lost like $14 billion in value in a single day, ended up dipping below. And this is what Elon
I said on the show, I've seen that Tesla stock, I think, dropped 7% that day. The fact that a 7% drop costs somebody like $14 billion, like, that is just a mind-boggling number. And, like, you can't, as I've gotten older and have looked in more in investing, you can't really look at it as like a $14 billion loss, because he never really had that money in his hand. At the same time, you know, like, all these are just like made up numbers. If you sold everything you own today, you would be the richest man in the world. Well, I'm not going to sell everything I own today. So
it's such a ridiculous amount of money. I don't know if he even cares, you know, that he loses $14 billion. Like, does it in any way matter? You've already got about $180 billion more than you'll ever need.
That's the point I made when the story came out. Was just like, how ballin' are you when you, like, when the headline hits and it's like Elon Musk loses $14 billion in a day and you just go, meh. an obscene amount of money.
I will just say we're closer to, Elon has stated somewhat recently that maybe one day he'll just buy Facebook and then immediately delete it and then just completely destroy it because he hates it so much. Anyway, whatever, the closer he gets to that, I guess maybe that's an option, which would just be entertaining to see happen. But
He's,
you know, right, again, we've got Bezos now at the time of this recording.
He may not be the hero we want, but he might be the hero we need. All right, keep it rolling. Let's go. Yeah, let's keep it rolling.
All right, so let's talk, while we're talking about Elon, we can talk about one of his companies. So Starlink Internet, it's rolling out. It's been impressive, and it's kind of these beta testers, beta users that are kind of adopting it at this point in time. And what we see is there was a survey ran, and they found that more than 50% of the country is saying, like, they are ready today to just kill whatever internet providers they have and to switch to Starlink Internet. 51% of Americans say that they are fully on board with Starlink Internet being their internet provider. And I think this just goes to show that we are all just tired of Comcast and you know, whoever else is out there providing internet, AT&T and everything else, that people are just ready for something new, even though the current cost of Starlink exceeds the average cost that most Americans are paying. But the current speeds for Starlink, it's actually cheaper per megabyte per second, as far as what the overall cost for high for the higher speeds. But yeah, it's just interesting that so many people are so willing to adopt it, as long as it can demonstrate some level of streaming quality, some level of consistent connectivity. People are ready to just quit on whatever they have and adopt Starlink. I think it's fascinating for a company that, you know, essentially 2 years ago just started randomly firing up low Earth orbit satellites that nobody really knew what was going on. And then now, you know, they're looking at, hey, how do we take a significant market share away from these companies that have existed for decades and have been in this industry?
Well, I mean, if you've been using Comcast and Time Warner to get your internet for however long you've been on the web, you're at this point just a battered wife. Like, you were just looking for any way out right now, man. Like so SpaceX is that hunky single dad at the PTA meeting ready to rescue you from your horrible, horrible relationship. Like, there is no love lost with any of these providers. Like, it is a forced relationship at this point, you know, and give me an option, man. Just give me an option to get out.
Yeah. And then, you know, if so many Americans are willing to use it. And then an interesting article also about Starlink came out, and it talked about that Russia is currently planning its own space internet plan, low Earth orbit satellite plan, that they're calling Sphere. And they're looking at potentially fining citizens who use SpaceX satellite internet and people who sign up for that service. And
this is essentially like every other country treating Starlink like Huawei.
Yes and no, right? It's also them. So when you look at like a lot of countries, not just Russia, and I didn't even think about the fact of like a worldwide
how's the Chinese government going to choke hold the web?
It's not just Chinese government. It's all kind of Middle Eastern countries. It's all like there is so much like government regulated media and control of actual internet, what sites you're going to go to. Like, if Starlink is successful at being able to provide worldwide internet to anybody who just buys the $400 antenna and then pays for a subscription, and everybody has access to the same internet, like, it does wound a lot of these authoritarian countries and the way they run. So I never actually thought about it in that context, that like, yeah, it was great to the concept of, hey, we're going to bring internet to everybody in the world, potentially, which was one of the goals of Elon Musk. I never thought about the fact that you're not just bringing internet, you're bringing open, unregulated internet to everybody.
Yeah, you're bringing a loophole into free internet. You know, it's something, yeah, neither one of us has talked about it. We rarely look at it from this aspect, but with Russia now coming out with this story, like, it makes total sense. Like, when you can't just shove down your government approved agenda through the World Wide Web, when your citizens finally have a way around that, they're scrambling right now. North Korea, Russia, China, they're all scrambling right now. You got over a billion people that are about to have true free internet.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting.
You know, they're going to ban. They're just going to ban those Starlink adapters in all these countries.
Like, yeah, they're going to ban those antennas. And
they go same thing as Huawei, and they're gonna say it for the same reason what we said is Huawei. It's national security. We don't want a private American company being able to see what you're looking at on the internet. And this, they're gonna pitch it for the same national security thing that we did with Huawei. Just one answer is going to be true or not. And I'm not going to be so arrogant to say that the United States might not do some dirty ass shit with Starlink if they could. Like, I'm not going to be that guy to say that we're all that innocent in this shit.
Yeah, you know, we all look at Bezos as the Lex Luthor, but you never know. It might be Elon. Like, this might be Elon's plan for world domination here. So I don't know. It's definitely an interesting kind of thought exercise there, is just seeing, you know, what actually happens if this is successful in the next couple of years, and to every rural, you know, underdeveloped society, there becomes open internet. to these places that have never seen it before. And
that's who I'm excited for. I'm excited for that 11-year-old Oklahoman that is just dying to get his ping rate down and play and pwn some noobs on Fortnite. I'm rooting for you, Bobby. I'm really rooting for you.
All right, and then we got a couple other stories before we jump into space. Just one really interesting thing that's been going around for a couple of years, but it's picked up some steam this week with a couple of articles, and that's this Bitcoin owner who has about $220 million worth of Bitcoin based off like current value, and he has had no access to this for years because he lost his password, and he has two attempts left. So it was put in a hard drive. Yeah. So it was put in a hard drive and this incredibly secure hard drive. You can only put in 10 wrong passwords before it locks forever and it's just gone. And he's made 8 false attempts so far. And this is a guy who, like, he never had any thoughts that this was going to be anything. He actually was like a tech blogger or a tech reviewer back in the early days of Bitcoin, who did a YouTube video explaining the tech behind Bitcoin and explaining what cryptocurrency is and stuff was all about. And he was gifted 7,000 Bitcoins by a viewer who was a Bitcoin early adopter who just said, hey, thanks for doing this and raising awareness for it or whatever else. And he was gifted 7,000 Bitcoins on the secured hard drive, had the password, and he just thought, whatever, real cute. This has got about 7,000 Bitcoins are worth a couple bucks. Not a big deal. Didn't really care to keep the password, kept the hard drive. And then later, as Bitcoin just blew up in value, those 7,000 Bitcoins are worth now $220 million today.
Well,
and he has no access to it. That's
why the story kind of resurfaced, right? Like, so when Bitcoin was like up to like 10,000, 15,000, everybody did this story because the dude had like almost 100 million in Bitcoin. Yeah. That shit hit 40 G's this week. So we're talking 40,000 times 7,000, like... And it's funny because the article states, you know, Bitcoin owner who lost password made peace with potential huge loss. Bullshit, motherfucker.
I know. Like,
bullshit. Bull fucking shit. Bezos doesn't want to lose $220 million. Okay?
Like, yeah, you can't. There is no making peace with this, right? Like, you might, like, maybe you could sleep again now just because, like, you've just given up so much hope that, like, you're in so much
if you made so much peace
again.
Why is there still two attempts left? because you know you got two more tries and you're hoping to God one day you go in your junk drawer and pull out that post-it and hit the motherfucking Powerball.
Yeah,
I really like the icing of this story would be like the day he finds the password, Bitcoin tanks to like 1,000.
like blockchain regulation.
Blockchain, yeah, blockchain blows the fuck up. Bitcoin drops to like 1,000. Mad people would lose millions, and then he unlocks a hard drive for $9,000.
I don't know. It's Yeah, I find this article hilarious just because the whole backstory on how he lost it, how he even came to have these coins, and then this whole concept that he came to peace with it. No, you did not. Like, you will be on your deathbed still being that dude who lost $220 million.
$50 million bounty to whoever could figure out this password. $50 million.
So he does. He has a bounty out there for anybody who could come up with a way to break into this Iron Key hard drive. It's just like, I don't know, like... All I know is if you're the maker of this Iron Key hard drive, how are you not running this? I mean, just saying, like, hey, we can lock somebody out of their $200 and some million. We could protect your nudes. Like, yeah. We got you. come on down.
this is the biggest like free marketing campaign you've ever seen for hard drive security, for sure.
Iron Key has gotta capitalize on this. There should be some kind of like YouTube commercials or something for it going out.
Like this does not help the case of making strong passwords, though, either. Like, this is like we preach all the time to make your passwords better. And this, like, this is not going to help that tentative crowd to change their, you know, their easy Yorkie password. Like, but what if I lock my Bitcoin away? Like, listen, lady. We're talking about your email address. No one's coming after you.
All right. And then all right, let's jump to a quick little space stuff. And so this last week we get the CIA releasing of the UFO Black Vault documents, which was tens of thousands of pages of documents. And still to this point, like, I tried to see they released it at the end of last week. As we're recording this on Monday, I was trying to see if, like, anybody's got some, like, hey, good, like, highlights of these documents. It's like, no, there's so many pages that there, I don't have not been able to find any significant, like, summaries of good information. A lot of it's kind of redacted documents. They're not completely open documents. Some of them are, but there are so many pages that we have yet to get, like, the conspiracy theorists, people, the YouTube videos and all that stuff to really come out and be like, ah, see, told you, here it is.
I love the fact that one of our tinfoil hat fucking stories ends up being the fucking, you know, the fedora of the day. Like, nope, not tinfoil, buddy. Like, so I love this.
What's going to be really interesting is, so the CIA had to release all these documents. They owe a congressional hearing to brief Congress on the security threats and on the implications of these documents. That's what I really, like, I
C-SPAN's
really
going to be lit. C-SPAN's going to be lit. Just think of the audience of that hearing. Like, who's going to be, who's going to be in the pews of that hearing?
Yeah, and, you know, because right now, even people who are in, you know, this space world, conspiracy theory world, are saying that, like, the CIA has made, like, the way they release these documents incredibly difficult for it to be in any way meaningful to people. Like, of course they did. Like, the fucking CIA, have you ever thought they were going to give you just a quick PowerPoint brief on the key highlights?
To me, I'm just highly disappointed. We had 50,000 people ready to Naruto run into Area 51. Like, everybody take a page, give me the highlights. Like, where's that crowd at right now doing the people's work? Nowhere. like get on it, guys.
Yeah, so let's I don't know, we'll see. Like I said, I don't think they have a date set for when they're going to brief Congress, but whenever that happens, we'll talk about it here for sure.
We will be on it
because that's going to be some of the best C-SPAN watching you can do. All right, and then a little more kind of commercial space talk. Virgin Orbit launched their 9 satellites off of a rocket that was pinned to the underside of a wing of a modified 747 this week, which was something that they tried to do before.
I was going to say, this is like Virgin's, this is Virgin's MO. They strap their shit to a plane and launch there, which doesn't give me much faith in their launching capabilities. Like,
well, I mean, honestly, it's a very cost-effective way. If you could just fly a plane the vast majority of the way, and then just launch these smaller rockets with these 9 satellites, and get them out into orbit that way. I mean, it's worth exploring, especially when we're talking about, like, these low weight payloads that you want to get into space. It probably has a pretty good play in, like, the satellite launching way. It's not like SpaceX, who not only do they want to launch satellites, but they want to launch people and gigantic things. But if you're just trying to get into this Virgin Orbit, like, hey, low payload launches, get into the satellite, the commercial satellite, government satellite launching, it's a pretty cost effective way of doing it.
I know, I just, and it probably doesn't make any sense, my rationality, but it just seems like they're just trying to bypass, like, the most dangerous part of space travel. You know what I mean? Like, we're just going to bypass the whole launching and landing of these booster rockets and everything. We're just going to strap you to a plane and then shoot you off into orbit from the plane. I get it. It's probably very cost effective, probably way safer. Probably they could probably pitch me a 2-hour argument on why it's better. And all I'll hear in my head is like, so you can't figure it out, huh? So So you just can't figure it out?
I don't know. Uh-huh. I think the concept, especially again when we're looking at orbit and satellite space, you don't have to sit around and wait for the perfect atmospheric conditions to happen to hover over your rocket pad. No, you just fly your 747 to where it makes sense to launch your satellites. Like,
no, I get it. It's like the surfer getting pulled out into the big wave by the jet ski. You know, like,
oh, you just weren't strong enough to swim.
You know what I'm saying? But like, my intuition is just telling me like you cheated. Like, you cheated. We got Bezos and Elon making these bomb ass booster rockets that can land, you know, automated by themselves on a dime, and all this shit they spent probably how many billions figuring out, and Virgin's like, nah man, nah, we're gonna tow this motherfucker into there and shoot it off every time. Like, it's fine, guys. I don't know, there just seems like there's something about it that just doesn't sit right with me. But like I said, most likely they're probably doing the better thing. Like, most likely it's probably the most efficient, safest way to shoot a bunch of shit into space. And I just, yeah, no, doesn't feel right without a count without a countdown and a big fucking plume of smoke. And it just don't feel right, man.
All right, and then you know, the last bit in space news we have is another, you know, commercial space endeavor, and this is, you know, you talk about Bezos and Blue Origin, and Blue Origin is looking at here in the next few months, they're trying to start their space tourism flights, and they've unveiled some images of this cabin of the Blue Origin, and I mean, it looks like the most first class seating that you're gonna get on any aircraft. Handful of chairs in a circle around you know, the nose of a rocket. And yeah, looking at it in the next couple months, being able to do this. They had, I think it was like their, what was it? I think it's, trying to find the number of it, but it was like 13 test flights that they've successfully flown. They launched this weekend or last week. And now they're saying, hey, they're ready. They're going to have another test here in February, and then they're looking by April to start putting people on these things, launching them up into low orbit, letting them check out space for a little bit, and then bring them back down.
The countdown to the HuffPo article of the first space selfie or the first space TikTok. Like that's what it's going to be. You're going to get like a few, like the son of some Russian oligarch is going to be on there, maybe a Jenner, and then, like, you know, some fucking uber rich in, you know, influencer that we don't know. And it's, yeah, I'm interested to see who takes these first couple flights, and just how we just turn space into this comical kind of endeavor now. It used to be something that we looked at in awe, and as we just start sending regular schmucks up there, it's just going to be one of those things that loses its pizzazz.
No, we've talked about this enough to say that this is absolutely important towards space exploration, is making space fairly for mundane, sure, and making it commercialized. Because if it wasn't commercialized, then you don't get an Elon Musk being able to do these things, who, yeah, he has thoughts towards how to save humanity by getting to Mars, but he couldn't do this if he wasn't profitable.
But what we know is, with commercialization comes a certain level of cringe. Absolutely. and that's all I'm stating is, here comes the cringe.
Yeah, absolutely. Whoever has like the highest TikTok count, I'm trying to remember her name, like the 17-year-old Charlie something chick, whatever else.
D'Amelio. Like D'Amelio, yeah.
When she's like one of the first people up in space, so that way she could do her space TikTok dance for the promotion of Blue Origin.
And that's all I mean. There's plenty of people out there that did things in the realm of physics and everything that helped get us to this point. Just put them on a ship first. Just do me a favor. Just put the people that really are still like in awe of what humans have accomplished by being able to do this. Put a couple of those guys on the first couple runs for me. You know, so they when they land, you see this like the childlike joy on some old physicist's face. You know, throw Neil on there for me, and then let the shitheads ruin it for everybody. Like, I just, it's gonna get to the point where like you almost don't want, it's, you know, like when everybody, like, I never watched Game of Thrones. Like, you know, it's gonna get to the point where like I don't need to go to space. Like, and just people are going to protest it because of the cringe factor. And I don't know, space, I think it's going to change the way these younger generations look at outer space. We will always be in awe of it. But a kid growing up where space travel, commercial space travel has just always been a thing. Yeah, he's not going to look up at the sky with, you know, childlike wonder for that much long.
I don't know. I disagree. I've got greater I guess optimism in our desire to still.
You've been quarantined too long, buddy.
The unknown there.
You've been quarantined away from humans too long, pal.
All right. Well, that's a week in news there. So as always, thank you for the listen. Thanks for sticking with us into 2021 here. And if you have a moment, leave that rating review and share it with somebody. Share it with one other nerd that you know and say, hey, I know these two idiots who recap things in a fairly concise manner, sometimes not so concise. But either way, it's a good time.
Yeah, if you've listened to this show, just bring up one story to a random nerd friend. If they didn't hear about it, tell them to listen to our show, because obviously they need to.
And other than that, we'll see you over in the community over at thenerdcantina.com/community. Continue the conversations there, and we'll talk to you again next week, nerds.
All righty. See ya.